Dixieland. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday. What's lit to this Wednesday morning? Joining us now on the line, Andrew Sorrell, our state auditor. Andrew, how you been?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm nervously awaiting next Tuesday, like everybody else in America, I think. But other than that, very well.
Yeah, I am too. But I mean, you got to feel good about where things are right now. I do, at least. I know people. Hey, you're putting your cat and your chickens before they hatch here, but I'm in the prediction business, and I don't know what she does. I think she's going to lose one of the blue wall states. You're starting to see, like, a lot of other signs. Where are you these days?
The most likely blue wall state to go her way is Michigan. Now, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin have voted together in every election since, I think, 1988. So they typically all go together. If there is a split in them, it'll be Michigan that breaks off and goes towards Harris. And I saw in Real Clear Politics she had retaken the lead in Michigan by a half percentage point. But if we win just one of the three blue wall states, if we split them up at all, we're going to win the presidency. Now, what would be a tragedy is if she wins the single congressional district there in Omaha, gets that electoral vote, and then wins the three blue wall states. But Trump wins everything else. He wins North Carolina, Georgia, you know, Ohio. He wins Arizona. Then the result will be 270 electoral votes for Harris, which, of course, is one more than she needs. If there were to be a tie at 269, then it would go to the House of Representatives and Donald Trump would become the president because we control more states overall than the Democrats do. But because of that one congressional district in Nebraska, it is possible that Harris wins this thing 270 to 268 if she does win those three blue wall states. Now, this is stupid because Nebraska could change the law and award all of their electoral votes to the winner of the statewide election, which is what they should do. And that would obviously go to Donald Trump. So if we end up with a 270-268 electoral victory for Harris, I blame the Republicans in Nebraska for being too weak-kneed to change their laws leading up to this election. So let's just pray that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll say this, though. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, we have to eat my words, but I watched this campaign and the trend is against her. And another thing, Andrew, is there any reason to believe that Trump will outperform his polling like he did in his past two presidential elections?
This is a very interesting question. So I think the answer is no. I think Trump's going to outperform. He usually outperforms by anywhere from 3 to 6 points, depending on what state you're looking at. If that's the case, we're going to have an absolute bloodbath in a good way. I mean, it's going to be red all over the country. You might even see Minnesota flip red. You might see New Hampshire flip red. You could see Virginia flip red. It wouldn't surprise me. They elected Governor Youngkin, so it's not unheard of for a Republican to win statewide there. So, yes, if Trump does outperform the polling like he did in 2016 and 2020, I mean, we're going to know Trump won early on election night. We'll know before midnight that Trump won if the polls are off that much again. Now, the things about polls being off is people forget they can be off both ways. So is it possible that the polls are within a 3-point margin of error, but it goes against us? Yes, that's possible. But what I found when I do polling is typically there's candidates who outperform their polls and there's other candidates who underperform their polls. And I've never been quite able to explain it. I have a good friend of mine in Lauderdale County. I won't say the name. Every time I've ever polled the guy, he's run for anything. He's always underperformed his polls on election day by 6 to 8 points. Myself in my two races, I have underperformed my polls. Thankfully, my margins were big enough. I was still able to win both races. But I have underperformed my polling historically. But I've also polled candidates who always outperform their poll. And Barry Moore comes to mind. Barry Moore outperforms his polling routinely in elections. Donald Trump has that history too. So you don't usually see it swapping back and forth. You don't usually see somebody like a Barry Moore outperforming and underperforming the next election. So to give a long, complicated answer to your simple question, I think Donald Trump does outperform, and I think he probably wins big.
I mean, Democrats will typically outperform polls. Only one I can think of in recent memory was Andrew Gillum in Florida in the Democratic primary. he way outperformed his polls and wound up being the nominee. Remember, he ran against Ron DeSantis. But, like, Democrats typically, they know how to find Democrat voters. These pollsters, I think these pollsters have a real hard time with Republicans. And you mentioned Barry Moore. I think with Caroline Dobson in that CD2 race, I'm not saying that Shamari Figures isn't going to win. It was drawn to be like +3, but it's like plus, all the polling is +5 to +10 right now. There's so something off with the polling. They're just not finding Republican voters. And I think that's sort of more of a product of conservatives or Republicans than it is anything else. You know, like I said, Democrats don't typically outperform, do they?
Well, I can point to a big example of when Democrats did outperform. Think back to the 2022 election cycle. What did everybody say was going to happen?
Yeah, you're right.
Big red wave. Where do we have a red wave? We had one in Alabama in the down ballot races, and we have one in the state of Florida on the coattails of Ron DeSantis. Everywhere else in the country, Republicans underperformed. So, yes, it is possible for Democrats to outperform. Donald Trump, historically, that's not been the case. They've done much worse than they've polled against Donald Trump. So, again, I still think we're okay, but it's not unheard of. In the 2022 election cycle, virtually every state they polled, all these congressional races across America, Republicans underperformed.
That's a fair point, and it's a glaring oversight. But, like, when you look at individual races, I mean, like, you have to point to one in particular where you do have this, and that's I don't know. I just, like, you know, we didn't think the Senate was going to go in 22. I just don't think people ever envisioned that you would have the big female turnout because of the Dobbs decision. And Republicans' lesson should have been, hey, how do you respond to that? They still don't have a good answer to that. And if I was Harris, I'd be camping out on that. But she's this weird Nazi stuff, too.
I don't think Republicans do have a great answer for that. But on the bright side, that issue is receded. I mean, that issue's not the number one issue like it was in 2022. People have been saying ever since a year ago, people have been saying the number one issue is the economy and inflation. And I think immigration is probably number two. And both of those issues are winning issues for Donald Trump and foreign policy. People trust Donald Trump more with the Ukraine war and the situation in between Israel and Iran and all that's going on in the Middle East. All of those issues, Donald Trump polls 10 to 15 points ahead of Kamala on. The only issue he's losing on is abortion. So I think we can still win the election because, yeah, people care about that issue, but they don't care about it as much as they did in 2022. It's kind of like they took their anger out on Republicans in 2022 after the Dobbs decision. But I say, you know, that was a lick worth taking. I mean, we've been wanting to overturn Roe for 50 years. We finally got it done in year, I guess, 49. I think it was a lick worth taking. Let me take you back to 2010. Democrats passed Obamacare. There was a big backlash from that. You know, there was a Tea Party wave and everything, and you saw Republicans do much better in a couple elections after that. But after that, people kind of forgot about it. We still have Obamacare, and Democrats started winning elections again. I think that's kind of what we can do in reverse with the Dobbs decision, if that makes sense.
Talk about this. I keep hearing this. The Speaker of the House said this last night on Fox News, a big demographic shift where the minority vote isn't as lockstep as maybe it once had been, and they're losing. It's not a big majority by any stretch of the imagination, but anywhere maybe as high as 15%, but at least 5% in many demographics. Are you a buyer of the demographic shift in this election?
Yes, I am, because I think if you look at African Americans, look what happened under Donald Trump's presidency. You had historically low unemployment. You had rising wages. I think they realized that their life was better, even though they didn't vote for him in 2016, right? But I think that they realized their life was actually better. And if the number one issue on voters' minds right now is the economy and inflation, and you trust Trump to handle that situation better, maybe some of those people have woken up. And it doesn't take, as you pointed out, it doesn't take that big of a percentage to really swing the whole election. I mean, if you get another 5, 10, 15% of African Americans, and let's not forget about Hispanics. Hispanics are voting for Trump in larger and larger margins, and Ron DeSantis too. So yeah, if we can make some inroads in those demographics, we've got a real shot, not of just winning this election, but if we break the stranglehold the Democrats have had on the minority groups for the last 50 years in this country, Republicans are very well positioned to win lots of elections going forward.
Yeah, it's just building off of that, but I guess it's more about Democrats and their they're sort of, I don't know, I think they've gone too far to the left. This is the question, and I still think, you know, I'm optimistic about Trump, and I think he's going to probably win on November 5th. Do they do what they did at 16, blame some other third party for their loss, or do we ever get, like, Democrats kind of trying to say, hey, this, we need to do this. We need to roll back some of this social issue stuff and lean more into this, or do you just anticipate it's just whistling past the graveyard once again?
Democrats are never going to blame the election loss on their policies. Okay, that will not happen. They will not say we went too far with the transgender issue. It's not going to happen. Now, I think they might know they did, because you've seen Kamala even backing away from that issue and being very careful what she says on that issue. I think she knows it doesn't poll very well. But are they ever going to come out and admit that? No, they're not going to admit it was their policy. They're going to blame Joe Biden and his little misstep he made last night calling all of Trump supporters garbage. They're going to blame Kamala on being a poor candidate, campaigning in Houston when she should have been campaigning in Wisconsin. They're going to blame everyone other, anybody, but they're not going to blame their policies. That's my prediction.
Yeah, well, and then they'll look for another scapegoat. The down ballot stuff, how close are you watching CD2? I think my take on this is real quick is this, that she's, it was drawn wide at +3, but it's anywhere from +5 to +10. I don't think the polls have really figured it out. I'm not saying the polls are intentionally wrong or misleading. I don't think that they have a good science down for AL1 or AL2 because they're new, and we, you know, the turnout's going to vary in the counties. She's got a shot at this just because Trump, the trend for Trump, I feel like, is going to drive that election, that who shows up to vote.
Let me highlight three different races or at least areas that you should be watching in this cycle. Talking about down ballot, obviously we're all watching the presidential election, you know, Fox News on election night, but I'm also going to have the Secretary of State's website up, and I'm going to constantly be refreshing Congressional District 2 to see where that race is. So that's the first one. Let me say this. You get kind of these inflection points with districts. So we've got a new district drawn by the court. There's a lot of attention on it, a lot of money spent poured in here. You have the Democrats swapping the candidate out. I mean, it's been a crazy election cycle. It's hard to poll this. It's hard to know what the turnout's going to be. When I ran for state house in 2018, I remember we went back and we looked at historical turnout, House District 3, and we projected there would be 13 to 14,000 general election votes. There were 18,000 people that ended up voting on election day, and I was so thankful I had targeted the low propensity voters with my advertising. Even assuming there was only going to be 14,000, I still said, but just in case, I'm going to go ahead and advertise to the low propensities as well. We don't know how many of those low propensities are going to turn out in CD2. That's why it's still possible Caroline Dobson wins that race. So, yes, I'll be watching that. Let's go a little bit further north. Let's go to Conecuh County. I'm watching Conecuh County. This is a county that's kind of on the verge of flipping. They've had some success there with the Republican Party. They've got a lot of strong candidates on the ballot for positions like circuit clerk, probate judge, county commission, superintendent of education. I'm watching Conecuh County to see what happens there, see if we kind of continue Alabama's 2022 red wave. Does that carry over into 2024? And even further north, the final one I'll mention is Jefferson County. Republican Party has been so close in Jefferson County. We've gotten between 45 and 49% with a number of different candidates in the last 8 years. We just don't seem to be able to win countywide. There's a couple of important races there, like probate judge. We've got Joel Blankenship and Johnny Amari running for probate judge there in different portions of Jefferson County. I think both of them have an opportunity to get a historic win and really shift the momentum in Jefferson County. So that's the third area of the state that I'm going to be paying really close attention to.
That's interesting because we don't talk about where the swing districts are in Alabama. But you think, to me, it's like maybe it's a Pickens County, a Russell County, and obviously Conecuh County, where you sort of have a mix of demographics. It's never, everything is pretty much baked in.
Yeah, that's right. There's not that many races to watch in Alabama. That's why I want to highlight these three for the listeners, because really, I don't know where else to look in Alabama. There might be some swing districts, maybe commission district here or there that's on the verge of flipping. But, you know, the Shoals area where I'm from is what you wanted to watch the last 8 years. But Scholz is completely flipped now. He won the sheriff in 2022. There's nothing left to win there. So there's just a few areas, but Jefferson County is key. You know, losing control of Jefferson County is really, really bad for the Republican Party.
But I think that's the trend there. I think that is becoming more and more blue. And I don't know where it goes. Some of the over-the-mountain suburbs, the growth there is not where it had been the last 20 years. It does feel more and more blue every time I spend any time up there.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd say the same thing about Huntsville. I mean, I remember Tommy Tuberville went 51-49 in Madison County. So it's like we're still winning Madison County, but just barely. You're starting to see legislative races get closer and closer. Obviously, we lost the House District 10 special election back less than a year ago. So that's an area of concern. There's going to be a lot more to watch. I mean, you know how it is in presidential year. There's not all that many races on the ballot in Alabama anyway. 2026 would be a much more interesting year. Well, I can talk about 10 different areas of state there that are kind of swing districts. We don't know which way they're going to go in 26. In 24, I really think it's just the three I mentioned and maybe a couple isolated here, there, or elsewhere.
Let me ask you, and this will be our last question. Have Republicans hit their ceiling in Alabama?
No, I don't think so. You know, I remember Republicans asking that question back in 2016 and in 2018. And can we expand our legislative majority anymore? Well, in 2018, we did. We picked up five more seats in the Alabama State House. In 2022, we went even. We lost one due to redistricting, but we picked up one other one. And then we lost one out the back end in a special election. I think in 26, we can possibly win House District 10 back. I think there's still a lot of old school Democrats that have been in positions for a long time. You might have a 3 or 4 term circuit clerk or probate judge or sheriff that's a Democrat in some of these rural Alabama counties, that the county is shifted Republican, but the but everyone still votes for Joe because they're friends with Joe, their Sunday school class with Joe, et cetera. Joe's still a Democrat. He's still winning. But as those people retire, those positions will be filled by Republicans. So we've not yet completely hit our ceiling. I think there's a number of races left that we can still pick up here in Alabama.
Andrew, we always appreciate your time. We'll do this again real soon. Thanks for hopping on.
Thanks, Jeff. Good talking with you.
All right, Andrew Sorrell, our state auditor there on the line. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.